mama's strength. Ain't nobody man enough to feel the pain. And you can be next, you better give respect. Cause ain't nobody breaking this redneck. No, they don't want none. No, they don't want none. Some country boys working overtime, boys. Kings of the South, we never had nothing. Blue collar boys do it with our hands muddy. No, they don't want none. No, they don't want none.
What's going on out there, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the latest edition of the Raw Deal Podcast right here on GERWECK.net, GERWECK.net, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, and iTunes. I'm the host, Frank D, but I'm not alone. I got my tag team partner, once again, Mr. Adley Green.
What's going on, Frank D? I am in quite the phenomenal mood.
Yes, Adley, it's been a phenomenal week. Wink, wink. But why don't you go ahead and let the listeners out there know how to reach you on your social media.
Y'all can hit me up on Twitter at @LeeGreen. You can also check out my blog where I talk about pro wrestling, MMA, movies, and comic books at thegreenscreen.net.
Absolutely. And check out youtube.com/GERWECK Report Podcast. That's your official YouTube channel of GERWECK.net. Tons of interview content up there right now with the likes of Eric Bischoff, Tuco Scorpio, Matt Hardy. The list goes on and on. Check it out right now. youtube.com/GERWECK Report Podcast. Subscribe to our channel. Like our videos. We definitely appreciate your support. Also, check out ProWrestlingTees.com/GERWECK. The official Raw Deal Podcast t-shirt is up right now for sale. Check it out today. ProWrestlingTees.com/GERWECK. So, Adley, it was a very exciting week here in the world of professional wrestling, and it all started with the Royal Rumble pay-per-view from this past Sunday night in Orlando, Florida.
The 29th annual WWE Royal Rumble emanated again from the Amway Center in Orlando, Florida, with a jam-packed card full of great matches, good storytelling, and some major surprises. The fans in the arena are absolutely jacked up for this match. And the opening on the kickoff show was Mark Henry and Jack Swagger defeating Darren Young and Damian Sandow, quite the odd team, the Ascension, and the Dudley Boys to earn spots in the Royal Rumble match itself, which is interesting considering Mark Henry and Jack Swagger are two former World Heavyweight Champions. Then we go to the first match of the official pay-per-view portion of the broadcast, where Dean Ambrose defends the Intercontinental Championship against Kevin Owens in a hellacious last man standing match.
This match was just simply outstanding. I'm not really a big Dean Ambrose fan, but the guy really impressed me with this match here. And that cannonball on the outside into the timekeeper's area when the barricade went down, that was just crazy, crazy stuff right there. And then to see the end come with Kevin Owens going off the top into those tables that he had set up earlier, and that was a great sequence, culmination to end this match and end this feud, quite honestly.
In the end, Dean Ambrose walks away from the match still your Intercontinental Champion. And then we move on to the WWE Tag Team Championship match as the comedic trio of The New Day took on The Usos. And a match that had some pretty good action. A lot of ha-ha as well. Everything you expect out of The New Day. But Frank D, tell us what you thought of this match.
I thought this match was pretty good. I mean, we've seen it a million times by now, though, but I thought it was actually pretty good. And we also saw the debut of Francesca number 2.
That's right. Xavier Woods got over Francesca very quickly, moved on to Francesca 2. And in the end, The New Day bested the Usos to retain the WWE Tag Team Championship. We move on to the WWE United States Championship match as Del Rio looks to defend the championship against Kalisto. And this was the rubber match, Frank D, because Kalisto won the belt from Del Rio on Raw last week. And then Del Rio got the belt back on SmackDown. So this was the tiebreaker. And Frank D, any memorable moments for you in this match?
These two guys just don't work together very well. They have no real in-ring chemistry. And quite honestly, I thought this match was kind of boring to me. You know, it's just these two characters don't mesh well together. And to me, Del Rio has cooled off tremendously since he came back in October at Hell in a Cell.
Oh, I think WWE is in a situation where they don't really know what to do with Del Rio now that John Cena's out. But nevertheless, Kalisto goes over on Del Rio to win his second run as United States Heavyweight Champion, and hopefully this run will be more fruitful than the last.
Yeah, they need to quit playing hot potato with the belt.
Then we get some Divas action here as Charlotte looks to defend the WWE Divas Championship against Becky Lynch. And for my money, this was one of the best women's matches on WWE television in quite some time.
On the main roster.
On the main roster, absolutely.
Yeah, to say the least. I mean, it was one of the best matches of the night. It was probably number two behind the Intercontinental Championship match that we saw earlier in the evening. But this was a very good match. It told a really good story of Becky Lynch kind of being the underdog in this, and Charlotte really showing her dominance as a heel. And she's really working out as a heel.
Ric Flair got involved in the match. He took off his nice sports coat, threw it on Becky Lynch, and that kind of gave the opening for Charlotte to get the 1-2-3 and go over on Becky Lynch to retain the WWE Divas Championship. Now, even though Becky Lynch didn't win this match, I think through this program, she's proven not only that she's a great wrestler, but she's a pretty good promo, too. And I think there's definitely championship gold in her future. But, Frank D, let's talk about the post-match angle that got everybody talking.
Yeah, well, before we talk about the post-match angle, let me talk about Becky Lynch for a second here. You know, the thing with Becky Lynch is that I think people have seen her as kind of the third wheel, you know, Team PCB. They saw her as, you know, not on par with the other women's wrestlers they have there on the main roster, and she's finally coming to her own here, and she did an outstanding performance in that match. I was very pleased with the outcome of this, and I hopefully it continues. But the big story of this match happened after the match, when the boss herself, Sasha Banks, made her return and completely popped the Amway Center in Orlando, Florida. Everybody was on their feet, glad to see the return of the boss, Sasha Banks. And Sasha came out there and she went into the ring and kicked Becky Lynch out of the ring, talking about it's her spotlight now. And basically, Adley, in this segment, we actually thought we might have seen the return of the BFFs with Charlotte and Sasha Banks. But no, that's not what happened. As soon as Charlotte went to leave, Sasha Banks hits her with the backstabber and then hits her with the Banks statement, and Charlotte's tapping out. And it already starts there. The feud we're going to see going into WrestleMania, possibly, Charlotte versus Sasha Banks.
I mean, when you have these three women being the centerpiece, the focal point of the women's division, I see nothing but good things for these three heading into WrestleMania. But now we move on to the Royal Rumble match itself. As it was announced on Raw, Roman Reigns was number one, and the Bulgarian Brute Rusev drew number two. And of course, Roman Reigns made short work of Rusev, threw him out with about 20 seconds to spare, and he get the big countdown, 3-2-1. Everybody's confused. They don't quite recognize the music playing over the loudspeakers. And then the fans in the Amway Arena see the words, "I am phenomenal." And you know what that means.
We know exactly what it means. Well, we didn't know exactly at first, because the people watching at home, like myself and Abby, we didn't know what was being played on that screen because the camera focused on Roman Reigns. But as soon as the crowd popped, and as soon as the guy walked into the arena, I knew exactly who it was. It was a phenomenal one himself, AJ Styles. And my God, man, the pop was incredible. As a matter of fact, WWE has listed that pop from the Royal Rumble that AJ Styles received as one of the top pops in all of WWE history.
It's definitely one of the biggest pops I ever heard watching wrestling on television. And I got to tell you something else, too. Kudos to the commentary team for putting over AJ Styles as he made his walk to the ring. JBL put over him being a former IWGP champion and making reference to Brock Lesnar also holding that championship. Michael Cole called him the hottest free agent in sports entertainment. Byron Saxton, just marking out, just kept on saying over and over again how he cannot believe we're about to see this. And then Michael Cole even put it over saying Roman Reigns now knows what he faces. And it was a great way to put AJ Styles in his WWE debut, because his first encounter is with, at that time, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, putting him on a par with the absolute best of the company from the get-go. And I thought that was great.
Yeah, you know, for all the crap that Michael Cole gets, he was really, really good here in introducing AJ Styles to the WWE universe. And the fact that he was marking out and knew the names of the moves of AJ Styles, you know, Styles Clash and all of that, I mean, that was a pretty big deal. So kudos to Michael Cole on that commentary.
Oh, and of course, AJ Styles lasted 28 minutes, had a really good showing for himself, but in the end, Kevin Owens throughout AJ Styles, and actually it was the most booed elimination in the Royal Rumble, but at the same time, Kevin Owens was the perfect person to eliminate AJ Styles on his first night, because I think if it was one of the typical WWE guys like Ryback or Titus O'Neil that threw out AJ Styles, they would have gotten that, you know, genuine heat. They would have gotten that Jeff Jarrett X-Pac type of heat, you know what I mean? They would have been just crapping all over the match. It would have been 2014 and 2015 all over again. So very smart move having Kevin Owens, the guy that's actually over at the audience, be the one to eliminate the phenomenal one in his first WWE outing.
It's a big deal. And I have no problem with Kevin Owens throwing out, you know, AJ Styles if it's going to lead to us seeing AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens in the future. Now, these two have wrestled in the past. We know this. But on the bigger stage now with WWE, so everybody out there in the WWE universe knows exactly how these guys work. So I'm all for it, man. I was kind of like, they threw out Styles, but then in the end, it told a story, so I'm happy with it. And this is the thing about this version of the Royal Rumble. They actually told stories. It was actually the progression of new feuds and feuds going into WrestleMania in this match.
They were definitely telling the all versus one concept as Roman Reigns looked to have things well in hand until he was blindsided by the League of Nations with this man watching on in approval. And then, of course, Roman Reigns was escorted by medical personnel to the locker room. Now, notice I didn't say he was put on a stretcher. He was simply escorted by medical personnel because he wouldn't get on the stretcher, and reports have surfaced now that WWE felt that if they put Roman Reigns on a stretcher, that it would have made him look weak. So it's kind of like, wait a minute. Okay, then why did you bring the stretcher out in the first place, number one? Number two, you could have just had him helped back to the locker room. But I think it really turned on Roman Reigns here because it basically looked like he was taking a breather. Because he got
pretty much.
Because he got booed when they first announced his name when he came out with the Royal Rumble, which is surprising, considering that Vince McMahon has done a hell of a job getting Roman Reigns over the last month and a half. So he got booed coming out, and he figured, okay, they'll turn this around. But then he basically just walks out while holding his ribs, so it looks like he's taking a breather. And then, boom, he comes out, throws Superman punches left and right, and it's like, okay, you took a break. So he did not get over at all in this match, in this booking. Just did him no favors because at the end of the day, they should have put him on the stretcher because it would have been more sympathy, and I think boos would have turned to cheers.
Reminds you of the WWF Royal Rumble from 1999. Remember No Chance in Hell? And remember the corporation followed Stone Cold Steve Austin went into the bathroom at the Arrowhead Pond, and the corporation was inside to beat him down, took him away in an ambulance. Well, it's kind of the same situation here, except for one big difference. Stone Cold Steve Austin actually was shown leaving the building, coming back after he commandeered the ambulance. Roman Reigns was just seen walking away and came back out and knocked out Sheamus, and then that's it. So, yeah, they put Roman Reigns in a bad situation.
I mean, the booking of this particular scenario did no favors for the Roman Reigns character whatsoever. I mean, Roman Reigns himself did the very best he could to make this work, but it just paid no dividends whatsoever. But moving on to the other parts of the Royal Rumble and the stories they told, the Wyatt family made their presence felt as the stable monster Braun Strowman eliminated wrestler after wrestler, making him the Rumble's biggest obstacle. Of course, he was later joined by Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, and actually Strowman eliminated Kane in the Big Show in this match, and usually those are the two hardest guys to eliminate. Braun Strowman actually just threw him out with rather ease. So, of course, the three Wyatt members are in the ring, and you know their plan is to help their mentor, their master, Bray Wyatt, win the Royal Rumble. So it just looks like, wow, who's going to stop the Wyatt family? Perhaps Bray Wyatt is going to be the WWE champion at the end of the night. But, of course, here comes the pain. Brock Lesnar arrives and just dished out violence. He was on an onslaught. Suplex City was in the house. And Lesnar actually eliminated Luke Harper, Eric Roman, and then he eliminated Braun Strowman. But before he eliminated Braun Strowman, he clobbered Strowman with a clothesline. I mean, I know JBL throws the clothesline from hell, but this was the real clothesline from hell. And I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're 7 feet tall or 8 feet tall. If Brock Lesnar throws a clothesline at you, you bump the first time. You don't bump on the third one, you bump the first time. And I think Braun Strowman was feeling that clothesline to the face in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when Brock Lesnar comes near and hits you, you go down, you sell it. You don't try that, you know, old 80s, I'm not going to, you know, sell this type of shit. No, you go down. So I agree with you on that one. And it kind of, you know, planted the seeds here of something that we talked about in the last edition of the Raw deal was the fact that they may be pushing towards a Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar feud or a Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar feud. And we talked about this on the last show, so no need to go into it now. But it looks like we actually might be seeing Brock Lesnar versus Bray.
I mean, right. I think Lesnar versus Bray is definitely the way to go. And what made the Wyatt family be eliminated so interesting is that Bray Wyatt had not made his way into the match yet. So therefore, his plan, so it seemed, on having his family help him win the championship was out the window. Of course, Bray Wyatt comes later on into the match, and then the three eliminated Wyatt members come back into the ring as well, and all four Wyatts gang up on Brock Lesnar, and then they eliminate him. It was kind of a shocking ordeal where Brock Lesnar was so dominant, you just could not picture anybody throwing him out. But of course, the Wyatts get back in there, put the boots to him, throw him out, and the crowd was kind of silent for a few minutes because they just cannot believe that, wow, Brock Lesnar was eliminated from the Royal Rumble. So it definitely had the desired effect as far as that shock and awe moment. And I think it definitely perpetuates the feud that we're going to see heading into WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar versus Bray Wyatt. The
crowd was very silent when Brock Lesnar got thrown out of the ring. It was kind of a surprise. I mean, I knew Brock Lesnar was not going to win this, but, you know, you knew something was going to happen with Lesnar and the Wyatt family. It was a given. So, yeah, they threw out Brock Lesnar, and it was kind of the reaction that, you know, the fans had when the streak ended, kind of, you know, but not on that level. But, you know, kind of the same feeling.
NXT standout Sami Zayn was another surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble. He made a beeline right for Kevin Owens and eliminated Kevin Owens, which hopefully rekindles their feud from last year in NXT, where Kevin Owens put Sami Zayn on the shelf and then went on to win the NXT title and then eventually got to the main roster. So I would love to see a Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens match at WrestleMania. And I was really happy to see that Sami Zayn got an excellent pop from the Orlando crowd, considering that's where NXT is filmed and that's what the Performance Center is.
The feud that will never die.
No, I mean, if reincarnation is true, then those two are going to be feuding for all time, absolutely. But then we move on to back to Roman Reigns, which we talked about earlier. He came back through the crowd, delivering Superman punches left and right. And then, of course, we get down to the nitty-gritty of the Royal Rumble, and we get to number 30, where it's the Game. Triple H, the 30th entrant in the Royal Rumble. Many predicted this was going to happen, and of course it came true because Vince McMahon even said Roman Reigns will never see this coming. And if you look at it from a storyline perspective, okay, Triple H is a COO. He's a suit. So obviously he's not going to enter the Royal Rumble, but of course he did at number 30, which kind of puts him over as a heel because, of course, the COO of the company is going to rig the Royal Rumble to the drawing where he's going to be number 30. So I thought it was pretty good. But then at the end, Triple H eliminates Roman Reigns, leaving Dean Ambrose and Triple H as the final two competitors. And the Orlando crowd absolutely erupted because there was a chance that Dean Ambrose might walk away with this as the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. And I even saw a scenario where Triple H was given the crotch chops while after he eliminated Roman Reigns. I thought for sure Dean Ambrose was going to come from behind, throw Triple H in and win the match. And that would just put a monkey wrench in the whole WrestleMania plans. It would turn WrestleMania upside down if Dean Ambrose won. But in the end, they went at it for a little bit, and then Triple H threw out Dean Ambrose. He is the winner of the 2016 Royal Rumble. He wins the second Royal Rumble, and he is now the 14-time WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
I was not surprised at all by the outcome of this. We already figured out that Triple H is going to be the one to get it, so I don't really have a problem with this because I think Triple H is going to be a guy that's going to drop the belt at WrestleMania to Roman Reigns. They still have Roman Reigns as the guy, so I guess Triple H is going to have to make the guy at WrestleMania. But I think that, you know, for all that they did trying to get Roman over, and, you know, it worked, but not everybody was on the bandwagon, and it proved it in Orlando.
Oh, of course. And one of the things I found interesting, now, I didn't like this at first, but then I found it interesting, is they weren't booking Triple H in the Royal Rumble as the sneaky, conniving heel that had to actually cheat to eliminate Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. They booked him as if he was the Game, the Game of old from 2004-2005 when he was running shop around WWE and eliminated Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose fair and square to win the WWE Championship. So I think they're going in a particular direction where this is not going to be the conniving Triple H where come WrestleMania he's going to have the League of Nations in his back pocket to try to help him to throw Roman Reigns. I think they're trying to tell a story where if Roman Reigns is going to win back the WWE Championship, he's not going to wrestle Triple H corporate suit. He's going to wrestle the Game. And I mean, you can be a little critical of that story, but I'm interested to see where it goes from here.
I've seen these, you know, memes all over the internet lately since Triple H won. It's basically the year 2000 all over again. It's the McMahon, Helmsley, Regine all over again. And that's kind of how I feel about it. But it's going to lead to a bigger story come WrestleMania 32 with Roman Reigns. Now, here's a problem that I'm having
Frank,
with the situation.
Frank, stop. Do not put the number 32. Didn't you hear, Vince? You don't name and number WrestleManias anymore. It's not WrestleMania 32. It's just simply WrestleMania Mania. Come on.
That's bullshit. Come on. That's bullshit. That is bullshit. So, you know, I guess at WrestleMania, we're going to have Roman Reigns versus Triple H for the belt. And the only problem I have with the story is that after Roman Reigns beats Triple H for the belt, what do you do next with Roman Reigns?
I mean, I think this is a great opportunity for WWE to have somebody waiting in the wings, push him really strong, so that way, after WrestleMania, you have a new, fresh opponent waiting for Roman Reigns. But usually at Extreme Rules, they usually have the rematch from WrestleMania, so I can see Triple H or Roman Reigns going at it a second time at Extreme Rules, so they might not start pushing somebody new until after WrestleMania, which is, you know, not really disappointing. You like to see something different, but that's the formula WWE always uses.
So now we're going to talk about Monday Night Raw. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I did not see all of the show. I saw what I wanted to see, and I tuned out. And we started the night off with Triple H cutting that promo, talking about how wrestling is his religion, and nobody is going to disrespect his religion. And also, Stephanie stated that they're going to be looking and evaluating the talent for tonight. And those talents that have a good show, they'll move them forward to the main event of Fastlane, which if they win that match, they will take on Triple H at WrestleMania 32. Oh, I'm sorry, at WrestleMania. I forgot we don't do numbers.
Well, if you want to get technical, Frank D, I guess you can call it WrestleMania Star.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yes. No, but the I guess Raw opened with the Authority coming out, Triple H bragging about how he won the championship in a nice suit, and the Stephanie kind of trolls on the fans saying, oh, you thought Roman Reigns was really going to win? I don't think so. Then she does the same thing to Dean Ambrose. Then she does the same thing to AJ Styles, which some fans were really upset with because they thought, oh, Stephanie McMahon is burying AJ Styles. No, 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 no. Stephanie McMahon was not burying AJ Styles. She was mentioning AJ Styles in the same breath as Roman Reigns and as Dean Ambrose, who happen to be the two top babyfaces in WWE right now. So putting him in that same company is a way to put him over. So no burial required whatsoever. And then we move on to the first match tonight, which is Kevin Owens defeating Dolph Ziggler. And again, these guys have wrestled each other a couple of times, so there's really nothing to get excited about. But these two, when they work together, they always work extremely hard. At the end, Kevin Owens with a pop-up powerbomb, 1, 2, 3. And of course, I like that Kevin Owens was actually still selling his injuries in the Last Man Standing match. He sold it as he made his way to the Royal Rumble match. He was selling it more on Raw. So, you know, Kevin Owens is definitely a worker, definitely knows his space, and I'm glad that he was kind of putting on the show. Of course, we also had a promo with AJ Styles where Renee Young wanted Styles to introduce himself to the WWE Universe. Of course, Chris Jericho walks in, talks about how Styles is now in the big leagues. He's had his eye on him, and he's wanted to wrestle him for a very long time. So that kind of sets the stage for what's to come. Then we have Styles versus Chris Jericho. Now, as AJ Styles made his way to the ring, I did notice that he was really pumped up, he was really excited, and then he actually said the words, "This is where I belong," and then he followed it up with, "This is where I should have been the entire time." What are your thoughts, Frank D?
I think he's basically telling it like it is that he should have been there a long time ago, and we already know all that. Everybody knows that AJ Styles should have been at WWE a long damn time ago.
Oh,
so I'm glad that he acknowledges that.
There's no denying that whatsoever. But do you think he was actually either told to say that, encouraged to say that, or do you think that just after being in that WWE environment for the last 5 days, he was just so excited and just was super pumped? He's, wow, I'm finally here.
I think he was basically saying that, you know, he's super pumped and I'm finally here. And I want the world to know that. I want Dixie Carter to know that. And it's kind of funny that, you know, TNA put out that statement about AJ Styles and then congratulated him the next day for his appearance at the Royal Rumble.
You know, TNA pretty much has zero credibility, so I could care less what they had to say at this point. Again, TNA just needs to focus on their wrestlers instead of somebody else's wrestlers. But nevertheless, back to Monday Night Raw, the bell rings, and AJ Styles and Chris Jericho do their thing. And I've heard a lot of people call this match, you know, amazing, calling it five stars, calling it, you know, this great, great encounter. And while it was a really good match, I wouldn't go to say it was great because there were some spots there that I don't know if AJ Styles, you know, went blank or it was a case where he was just trying to get used to that WWE ring, because remember, that WWE ring is probably the biggest ring he's ever wrestled in, and on top of that, they actually use ropes as opposed to steel cables. So I think it took some adjustment getting used to that ring. And Chris Jericho had to kind of grab him and, you know, in a headlock, kind of slow him down for a couple of times. And I was wondering also if it was the fact that AJ Styles wasn't slowing down, or maybe Chris Jericho couldn't keep up. I wasn't really sure. But, you know, at the around the 8-minute mark of the match, they found their rhythm, they found their balance, and it was just action-packed from beginning to end. AJ Styles had a springboard forearm that just looked incredible. And I think that really popped the crowd, because AJ Styles, we call him phenomenal, we call him amazing. He's arguably the best wrestler in the world, but that guy moves like he's out of the Matrix. He moves like nobody else, and that's part of what makes people want to see him.
It wasn't by no means a 5-star match. It was basically his, you know, him coming into the company at this point and trying to see if this guy is what they say he is. And that's why Vince McMahon ordered this match to happen, because Chris Jericho has always been the standard bearer for new talents that come into the company, and they're working with Jericho to see if they can hang. I think it's going to take some time for him to get used to the fact that it's a different ring, it's a bigger ring, they actually use rope and not the cable that he's used to using. So other than that, I think he's going to be fine.
Oh, I have no doubt he's going to be fine, too. There's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, but eventually he'll get the hang of it, and then he'll be just putting on great match after great match after great match. But at the same time, people got to realize this is WWE, where it's more about story than match. So his style, no pun intended, is going to be toned down to a degree, because remember, Raw and SmackDown, for that matter, have a lot of 5-minute matches, and it's really hard to put on this great wrestling clinic in 5 minutes, and you don't really need to put on a wrestling clinic or 5-star match every single time. It's very hard to do. So I think you're going to see a lot of times where AJ Styles does a few moves here and there simply to enhance the story, but when the time comes, he'll be putting on great matches. So I'm not worried whatsoever. But in the end, AJ Styles gets his first win in the WWE, going over on Chris Jericho. They shake hands, but it takes Chris Jericho a little longer to let go of the handshake. So that was a sign that maybe Chris Jericho is not done with AJ Styles just yet. And I wouldn't mind seeing this match happen again.
Here's the bottom line with the situation, Abby. The match was nowhere near 5 stars, but if AJ Styles keeps making mistakes the way he's doing in the matches, and we've only seen him perform at the Rumble, which I thought he did okay, and on the Raw match he did fine, but it was those little spots there where he might have gotten lost, and that's going to be right there where people say, oh, well, this dude should have went down to, you know, the Performance Center. He should have went down there to developmental instead of being rushed to the main roster.
I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, and AJ Styles is a very smart guy, and I think he knows that when WWE is paying him the amount of money that they're paying him, he has a learning curve, but also he doesn't have that long to learn. So he's pretty much learning on the road right now. And I have no doubt that he's going to get the hang of it eventually. But then we move on to the Saturday Night Live portion of the show, where The Rock showed up backstage in a pickup truck. I thought it was Steve Austin at first. He kind of crapped on The Miz, told The Miz to park his car. The Big Show hugging a laptop and told The Big Show, hey, you know, if you won the Royal Rumble back in 2000, the producer was going to put you in the Scorpion King, not me. And of course, Big Show was like, damn, I could have had your life, and breaks the laptop out of anger. And then he moves on to the ravishing Russian Lana as he puts her over, starts talking about how they did the deed in bed back in the day. And of course, Rusev is right there, not having any of it. So I think that was probably a little bit of a rib towards Lana, because WWE and Vince McMahon in particular aren't happy with Lana these days. And then, of course, we go to the curtain. Rock shows us the gorilla position. It comes out. The crowd of Miami is absolutely eating up. The Rock's telling jokes. The Rock's doing his thing. And then, of course, then the New Day comes out. And this is the part of the show that I really, really liked, because the New Day doing their thing as the Rock was just gold, in my opinion. And I think the Rock brought the best out of the New Day. And I think, in a way, the New Day brought, you know, a lot out of the Rock, because I think it was some of the Rock's best stuff in quite some time. I'm not going to say it's his Attitude Era stuff, but I thought it was some of his best stuff in a while.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan of this segment. It didn't really do anything for me. One thing we should point out was the fact that during the night, we had some people dressed up like wrestlers in the front row. They were dressed up like The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, I believe, and they were causing a quote-unquote distraction to the point where WWE had security move them to the other side of the hard camera side and to get them out of the way. And, you know, WWE didn't want any focus on these people. And then The Rock went out there and started talking to him. The Rock went off script and basically did the exact opposite of what WWE wanted him to do.
Oh, the entire Rock segment went 25 minutes, and I know for a fact that that segment was not supposed to go 25 minutes. But, of course, when it's The Rock doing his thing, you really can't tell him to stop. You really can't tell him to take it home, and you're not really going to do that because the ratings for Raw were really good this week, and that was because of The Rock. So I'm sure Vince McMahon is all smiles right now looking at the ratings. But, of course, that did affect the other wrestlers because now every other segment on the show had to be cut short.
Right. And there's one thing about it. Yeah, it's The Rock, whatever. I get that. But I remember hearing a story years ago when Scott Hall and Shawn Michaels had that ladder match at WrestleMania 10, and it was a phenomenal match. But when they came to the back, Randy Savage chewed them out because they went overtime. And he says, you never, ever go overtime because that hurts the rest of the wrestlers here. And you never do that because these other guys that were supposed to have a match on there, they aren't going to have their match, so they're not going to get paid.
Well,
so you never do. You never go overtime.
I mean, the same thing happened at WrestleMania 29 where Triple H and Brock Lesnar went way, way over their allotted time. And they went over so much they actually had to cancel the Divas match. And, of course, right. But then again, who the hell's going to tell Triple H, hey, take it home, and who's going to admonish Triple H for going over time? I mean, Triple H always goes over his time, whether it's a promo, whether it's a match, you name it. So, again, it just really hurts the other wrestlers. It hurts them getting money. But, of course, I don't think Vince cares because it's The Rock doing his thing, and it brought extra ratings to the show. But in the end, the Usos come out, backing up their cousin, The Rock. They take out the New Day with a couple of super kicks. Rock uses Xavier Woods to spine buster and then sets him up for the most electrifying move in sports entertainment today, the People's Elbow. And, of course, that ends the segment. And then we go to the main event where it's Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns taking on Sheamus and Rusev. And, of course, it was really nothing to the match. I mean, all four guys worked very hard, but in the end, Reigns and Ambrose come away with the win. They put Rusev through the table as a measure of vengeance for Rusev putting Reigns through the table the previous night at the Royal Rumble. Then comes the segment that really bothers me, Frank D. Really bothers me. I'm going to try not to swear on the show because I want to swear. Stephanie McMahon comes out and says, okay, I've had a chance to evaluate all the talent, and she announces the main events for Fastlane. And it's a triple threat match. And the winner of that match, of course, goes on to face Triple H in the main event at WrestleMania. And the participants in the triple threat match are Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Brock Lesnar. Now, that, and this is just lazy writing, in my opinion, because number one, the whole point of the episode was who's going to impress Stephanie McMahon. Now, how the hell did Brock Lesnar impress Stephanie McMahon? Tell me how, because he wasn't there, so don't worry, I'll wait. And then, of course, Dean Ambrose, okay, you know, whatever, he's the Intercontinental Champion, you know, put in the mix. But then Roman Reigns they put in the match. So the McMahon-Helmsley era, a.k.a. the Authority, spends a month and a half trying to screw Roman Reigns out of the WWE Championship. They finally figure out how to screw him out of the championship, and then they go, you know what? You were really impressive tonight. I'm going to give you another match. And if you get this match, a new main event WrestleMania. So I don't know what the deal is, Frank D.
You know, it makes no damn sense. And that's pretty much what it is. And this is a Raw Deal podcast. You can say whatever you want. You know, bottom line is this. It made no sense from a storyline point of view at all. Here's a guy that you've been wanting to get the bet off of, but you're now saying, oh, yeah, let's give him another shot. Brock Lesnar wasn't even in the match. Brock Lesnar was eliminated from the Royal Rumble. Oh, yeah, but you impressed us, so we're going to give you an opportunity. It's bullshit.
And, of course, I mean, this means you're going to have three baby faces in the match for the main event at Fastlane, so there's really going to be no heat going into this. And, plus, they've really spent the last year and a half really going over and putting over how tight Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose are. It almost seems like it's a handicap match, Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. So I hope they do a couple of things to tease some dissension where perhaps Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns make it clear that, hey, you know what? We're boys, we're friends, but when that bell rings, it's every man for themselves. And I hope they go that route. I mean, we got a few weeks till Fastlane, so hopefully WWE can make some adjustments and make this thing work. You know, even though the writing of the show, you know, is some weak areas, the talent is working very, very hard to do the best they can. So, you know, no complaint from the talent on my end. But let's switch gears, Frank D, to NXT, because WrestleMania's card kind of looks up in the air right now. There's rumors about Lesnar, Bray Wyatt, rumors about Triple H, Roman Reigns, and it doesn't really seem like the sexiest show. But let me tell you, NXT TakeOver, Dallas, on Friday, April 1st, WrestleMania weekend, is one of the sexiest cards I ever seen, because it was announced at the NXT television tapings this week that Shinsuke Nakamura is on his way to NXT. He's going to debut at NXT TakeOver Dallas, and he's going to be wrestling one Sami Zayn.
That was a huge announcement. That was huge. I can't wait to see that match. I'm looking forward more to this show than actual WrestleMania. It looks like they're going to let Nakamura keep his ring name.
Oh, yeah, because William Regal, when he made the announcement and showed the video on the Titantron in the Full Sail Arena, he called him Shinsuke Nakamura. So, I mean, as far as NXT goes, he's definitely going to be called Shinsuke Nakamura. I wonder if they change that once he goes to the main roster, because he's not spending much time in NXT. He's going to be there to kind of immerse himself in the English language, learn the American style, because when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling, no emphasis in New Japan on keeping everything in the middle of the ring. There's no emphasis on, you know, selling to the hard camera, make sure all the moves are facing the hard camera. So WWE, that's their big focal point. So he's got to learn that.
And that's the problem with Styles too. Styles, you know, Styles has been on TV for years, you know, TNA or whatever, but they really emphasize on that big time in WWE, that hard camera sell, those facials. So you're right. I mean, he's going to have to learn this stuff. But I think that with Nakamura, when he comes to the main roster, I don't really think they're going to change his name. I think they're going to keep him the way he is.
I mean, it's a possibility they may drop the Shinsuke and just simply call him Nakamura, because, you know, Vince likes those one-word names like Cesaro, Sheamus, Neville, and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't be surprised if they kept Shinsuke Nakamura in its entirety. And plus, I don't think Nakamura's going to have a problem learning that WWE style, because this dude, if you ever seen him, Frankie, this dude has charisma for days. I mean, this dude at Wrestle Kingdom 9 a year ago came out to the ring dressed as a combination of Michael Jackson and the Statue of Liberty. And when you hear that, you're probably thinking, what the hell is that? But this dude made it work. He made it look like the most macho getup of all time. And there's not many people that can do that, Frank D. So I think Nakamura is going to be, you know, he's going to have charisma for days, and he's going to really impress some people in WWE when his time comes to make his main roster debut.
I mean, I saw the guy, some of his work in Ring of Honor when they would do those New Japan split shows. So, I mean, he has it, but hopefully WWE won't make the mistake of screwing with the character, trying to tone a character down, because, you know, they've been known to do that type of thing.
And, you know, when it comes to Nakamura, there is one thing that they cannot do, and this is going to sound weird, Frankie, but you know, but let me go with this. They cannot book him as Japanese.
Right.
Now, what I mean by that is every single time they've brought in a Japanese wrestler, they always have that traditional Japanese entrance music, or, you know, some remnant of that traditional Japanese music. And they always do, you know, spin kicks, and they always do a very stereotypical Japanese gimmick. And when it comes down to it, when you think of some of the Japanese wrestlers in the past that WWE has employed, really besides Yoshihiro Tajiri, every other Japanese wrestler they had, that's the only thing you could say about them is that, oh, they're Japanese. And WWE cannot do that. Yeah, talk about the fact that he's Japanese, you know, but don't make that his only thing. Because if the only thing you push about Shinsuke Nakamura is that he's Japanese, the audience is not going to care. You know, they want to know about the man. They want to know about the legend. They want to know why this guy is here. You know, give him a story. Make up a story. I don't care. But if the only thing you have to tell the audience is that he's Japanese, he's not going to get over. And I hope WWE has learned from their past mistakes. And considering they're paying him a shit ton of money, I think they're going to go in that direction and push him as a real-deal superstar.
They have to. They can't make the same mistakes they did with Taka Michinoku back in the day. You know, they got to really, you know, do something big here with Nakamura. And I'm thinking, too, if you have Nakamura and say that Nakamura is still down there at NXT, and maybe they, you know, did something in the future with, say, Jushin Thunder Liger again.
Oh, I mean, that would be amazing. But I'm telling you right now, Frank T, if I see Nakamura dressed up as a samurai with a katana blade, I'm going to kick a hole in my television set.
Right.
I will. But also, Nakamura coming to NXT also has repercussions for Ring of Honor's 14th anniversary pay-per-view that's going to be in Las Vegas at the end of February, because Nakamura was being promoted for that show. And when even when the rumors hit that Nakamura was on his way to WWE, Ring of Honor was still telling everybody that, hey, even though the rumors are going on, Nakamura is still appearing in Ring of Honor. And I kind of knew that, you know, eventually we would see a press release that Ring of Honor had to kind of get out of the Nakamura business, and it's happened. Nakamura will no longer be appearing at Ring of Honor's 14th anniversary show. However, Ring of Honor did state in a press release that they do have another big star for New Japan taking his place on that show. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going on with Ring of Honor and see who they get. I mean, I know Tanahashi has a shoulder injury, dislocated his shoulder. The rumor is he's going to work, he's going to continue working on that shoulder injury, but I don't know if he's going to take a trip to the United States with a dislocated shoulder. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Ring of Honor. Hopefully they'll get something out of this deal going forward. But let's talk about the rest of the NXT TakeOver Dallas card. We talked about Nakamura versus Sami Zayn. The main event is going to be Finn Balor defending the NXT Championship against Samoa Joe. Asuka is going to be going against Bayley for the NXT Women's Championship. Dash and Dawson will be defending the NXT Tag Team Championship against American Alpha, which is Chad Gable and Jason Jordan. Gable and Jordan are two of the most over-talented NXT right now, so I can definitely see them walking away with the gold. And of course, Austin Aries taking on Baron Corbin. I mean, this card is the epitome of sexy. And as I said earlier, I'm more excited for this right now than WrestleMania.
Yeah, big time. But let me talk about a little bit about Nakamura real quick, and the fact that him coming into WWE is having the trickle-down effect on the rest of the business. And that goes to show right there, because his signing with WWE has put Ring of Honor in a tough bind here to find talent. And they said they have another big talent coming from Japan. We shall wait and see who that talent is.
And speaking of talent, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson may not be heading to NXT after all. Rumors and reports are coming out now that they actually might skip Full Sail University altogether and debut on the WWE main roster. And I think that would be a really good idea, because when you get Doc Gallows, he was a former employee of the WWE's main roster that he left, got released, went to New Japan, went to TNA, Ring of Honor, did his thing. So he's actually a better wrestler than he was before he left WWE. So it would make no sense putting Doc Gallows in a developmental situation where they've already developed him, but now he's actually even better than he was before. And then, of course, you got Carl Anderson, who is, you know, I think he's one of the top 10 wrestlers in the world today, and there's really no need to develop that guy. So, besides the hard camera, you know, selling stuff that we talked about, but Carl Anderson is actually a very animated wrestler. If you saw Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson's feud with The Kingdom, Matt Taven, and Mike Bennett with Maria Kanellis, Carl Anderson was just hilarious at trying to get Maria to, like, pay him attention and trying to slap Maria's ass and everything. So that guy's animated. He can play a kooky character, but he can also get it done in the ring. So I have no problem with these guys skipping NXT and going to the main roster.
Yeah, there's no reason to send these two guys down there to NXT. I mean, they have fully developed their skills. I mean, you look at Doc Gallows, for instance. This guy is a long way from when he was Festus or Luke Gallows in the Straight Edge Society. Went over to TNA, was a part of the Aces and Eights, and could have had something big going on there with Bully Ray, but they couldn't come together and agree on money. So he went over to New Japan, hooked up with the Bullet Club, and pretty much defined himself, transformed himself into who he is now. And I think the only reason why they would have sent them down to NXT would be because of the connection with Finn Balor and the Bullet Club. And that's what we were talking about, you know, last week when we were talking about Bullet Club, Balor Club.
Moving on to TNA land, it was announced earlier this week that Jeff Hardy has re-signed with TNA, actually extending his current contract, so he's going to be on Pop TV for quite some time. And I just think this is another sign that TNA probably has a little bit more money now that they're no longer on Destination America. They're on Pop TV, and they're being very selective in who they give these guaranteed contracts to. You know, Mike Bennett has one, James Storm has one, and they offered one to Kurt Angle in a non-wrestling capacity, and now Jeff Hardy has one. So I think TNA realizes, hey, we gotta start doing guarantees, otherwise we're gonna lose these guys.
I'm not really surprised at all that Jeff Hardy re-signed with TNA. I mean, let's be honest about it. At this point in his career, Jeff Hardy is a TNA guy, just like Matt Hardy is a TNA guy. Matt Hardy is holding on to their TNA World Championship right now, so I'm not at all surprised that Jeff Hardy stayed with the company. Jeff is loyal, And I think that Jeff has done a lot of good work over at TNA, and there's no reason to come back now to WWE. I don't know if physically he can handle that schedule that WWE, you know, has the wrestlers go through.
Oh, I completely agree, because you're working almost every night when you work the WWE schedule. You're working weekends, you're working Monday on Raw, you're working SmackDown typically on Tuesday, you're flying around doing interviews and radio appearances on your day off, you're working pay-per-views, you're doing overseas trips. And with TNA, you know, you don't really work that often, and he's getting a pretty good payday for them. Plus, there are rumors going around, Frankie, that the Omega crew actually has a lot of clout in the TNA locker room, and also has a lot of clout when it comes to booking, decision-making, and creative. And, of course, creative, you know, the Omega crew I'm talking about, you know, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, and Shane Helms. So I think you're in a situation where you're getting good money, you're not wrestling that often, and you get to have a hand in creative with two of your best friends in the business, including your brother, Matt. There's really no need or desire for Jeff Hardy to probably leave TNA and go to WWE, considering he doesn't want to be in that corporate environment.
The simple fact of the matter is this. Like I said earlier, Jeff Hardy signing with them, you know, it's not really a big deal. The fact that Omega has clout down at TNA and not WWE says a lot. And that's all I got to say about it.
And, of course, going back to AJ Styles, there were some rumors that WWE was forcing AJ Styles to tone down his ring style, and that included banning the Styles Clash. But fear not, on SmackDown, Styles Clash comes into play, makes his debut as AJ Styles pins one Curtis Axel with the Styles Clash.
Yeah, he got him with it, and there was rumors that they were going to ban the move. Of course, rumors on the internet, you know, like night and day, and of course it was bullshit because he finally hit the move, and that's the end of that.
And the WWE's injury problems continue to manifest, as now Sheamus has injured his arm. He has severe tendonitis in his arm. It's currently in a cast. And as a result, he will not return to the ring for between 3 and 5 months. However, he's going to remain on TV just like Wade Barrett. So now you're in a situation where one of your top stars is injured. You can't use him in the ring, and this really stinks for the League of Nations, because now you're in a situation where two of the four members are injured and can't wrestle and can barely do anything physical.
Yeah, the League of Nations were screwed from day one when they put that faction together. I'm not really a big fan of the League of Nations. I think that, you know, Del Rio came in hot, and ever since he's been aligned with this faction, it's pretty much cooled him off. And nobody took Sheamus, you know, seriously as a world heavyweight champion to begin with. So it's just, you know, I'm not really feeling the group. I'm really not. So, I mean, it sucks for Sheamus to be hurt and can't perform. I mean, the same thing happened with Wade Barrett. So you only got Rusev and Del Rio working matches. You know, there's only so much you can do with that.
No, I'm curious as to why they're having Wade Barrett and Sheamus remain on TV even though they're injured, which is something WWE usually doesn't do. You know, is this the case where they don't want the word to get out that these guys are actually injured because of the whole concussion lawsuit? Or is the deal where they're so low on talent as it is with all the injuries, they just want to keep as many faces on television as possible?
I think that they want to keep as many faces as possible on TV because they're so depleted right now. And it's kind of funny because, you know, Vito asked us a question last week on the Raw deal about the concussions, but he also said that Daniel Bryan would not be returning until the concussion lawsuit has been dealt with. And I've actually read online that Vince McMahon has told Daniel Bryan that, you know, you're not going to get cleared. Most likely, you're not going to get cleared 100%, is what he said. So if they're offering you a non-wrestling role within the company and the man is telling you that you're not going to get cleared, what the hell does that tell you?
I mean, those are the rumors that are coming out right now because, according to the Wrestling Observer, a lot of the wrestlers at WWE expected Daniel Bryan to make his return to the ring at the Royal Rumble, and they were shocked that he wasn't there. And, of course, Daniel Bryan has been cleared by his own personal doctor and by a highly accredited doctor at UCLA. So he's been cleared by two doctors, while WWE's doctor, Joseph Maroon, who is the subject of the Will Smith concussion movie, has not cleared Daniel Bryan. And Vince McMahon now, the rumors suggest that he's told Daniel Bryan point blank, we're not going to clear you to return to the ring. So this has a lot of interesting components because you got to wonder, was Daniel Bryan's contract frozen a la Rey Mysterio, a la Batista, since he's been injured? I mean, if so, does his contract kind of remain in limbo until he returns to the ring? But also at the same time, how bad does Daniel Bryan want to wrestle? And what I mean by that is, if he has been legitimately told by Vince McMahon, we're not going to clear you to wrestle, that means you're not going to be wrestling in WWE ring again. So do you take the payday Do you just sit at home and take your downside guarantee? Or do you fight to get out of your contract and wrestle somewhere else? Now, even though WWE is not going to clear him, Daniel Bryan has a right to make a living the way he wants to. And I know for a fact, Frank D, that if he were to sue WWE to get out of his contract, and he has two doctors clearing him and WWE's doctor won't, he'll have a very easy time getting out of the contract. A judge will definitely rule in his favor. But at the same time, there will be heat between Daniel Bryan and WWE. And actually, heat might even trickle down to his wife, Brie Bella. So again, I'm just speculating, but those are some real possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, two doctors clear you. The WWE doctor won't clear you. Vince McMahon telling you that you're not going to be able to perform. You got all these different talents coming in that he wants to work with, and he's sitting on the sideline. I even made a prediction on last week's Raw Deal episode that I thought Daniel Bryan would have been one of the participants in the Royal Rumble match, and surprisingly, he was not. And I don't know what they're going to do with Daniel Bryan at this point. I mean, Bryan realizes that he's not going to make WWE kind of money anywhere else. So I think that he's going to stay put until something develops.
Oh, absolutely. Because when you look at the situation, he may not have the money to take WWE to court in order to get out of his contract if he even wants to. And plus, when you look at the history, they put the world title on Daniel Bryan after WrestleMania 30. And he got injured, and they take the belt off him. They do the same thing at WrestleMania 31 with the Intercontinental Championship. Same thing happens again. So WWE's in a situation from their perspective that he's unreliable. He's injury prone. We can't push him long term because he gets injured. And if that is the case, that Daniel Bryan's body just cannot hold up to the rigors of professional wrestling at his age, I think promotions like Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling are just not the way for him to go, because that style is even more brutal on your body, and it'll just do him no favors.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see Daniel Bryan going back to the indies at this point. I mean, no. Don't see him going to, you know, the big promotion New Japan. So I just think that Bryan's going to stay put right now.
You're listening to the Raw Deal Podcast with Frank D and Atlee Green right here at Gerwick.net.
But now let's talk about the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2016. What Culture Wrestling released a report saying that they know who the Hall of Fame class is going to be for 2016. We already know Sting's going to be headlining this particular class, but What Culture Wrestling also revealed that Jacqueline, The Godfather, JBL, The Fabulous Freebirds, and for the celebrity wing, Regis Philbin are going to fill up and comprise the 2016 class of the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, we all know the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony always takes place on the night before WrestleMania, so Frank D., what do you think of this list?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I mean, Sting, yes. JBL, I don't know about that one. JBL only had maybe one or two good years in the business when he was a WWE champion. Other than that, he was a Justin Hawk Bradshaw with Zebakaya as his manager. Then he went on to the New Blackjacks, and then he was part of the Ministry of Darkness as, you know, one half of the Acolytes with Ron Simmons. And then he turned into JBL. And I don't really see him as, you know, a Hall of Fame guy, but you know what? I guess, you know, once you've won the championship, they'll give you a Hall of Fame induction. That's, you know, I don't really care for it. And I definitely don't think that Charles Wright, the Godfather, is a WWE Hall of Famer. But at the same time, you got to put it into perspective like this. The Hall of Fame is just a man sitting in his office saying, hey, I'm going to put this person in, that person in, and that person in. It's not really going by, you know, your accolades.
Oh, I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, the Godfather is definitely one of the more popular characters of WWE's Attitude Era, but now we are in the PG era, and WWE barely lets the word ass be heard on their television show, so now you have the Godfather, Charles Wright. Well, yes, he was Papa Shango. Yes, he was Kama Mustafa, the Supreme Fighting Machine, but his most popular character by far is the Godfather, which is a pimp who comes to the ring with a bevy of ladies called the Ho Train. So I'm not sure how WWE's going to get that over in this PG environment if this list is accurate. But going back to JBL, Frank D, in my opinion, I compare JBL to Roger Maris of the New York Yankees. Roger Maris of the New York Yankees, he broke Babe Ruth's home run record, but he is not in the Hall of Fame, and because the consensus is Roger Maris only had one good year, and that's when he broke Babe Ruth's record. And I look at JBL the same way. He only had one good year in WWE, and that is when he won the WWE World Heavyweight Championship from Eddie Guerrero at the 2004 Great American Bash and held on to it all the way to WrestleMania 21, where he dropped it to John Cena, which began John Cena's road to superstardom. So he's only had one good year, so I don't really think that qualifies as a Hall of Fame. But as you said, of course, you win that belt, you get a Hall of Fame induction. Fabulous Freebirds, long, long, long overdue for Michael Hayes, Gordy, Buddy Roberts to get in there. And of course, the Hall of Fame happening in Dallas, Texas. It's the perfect place for this to happen. And then, of course, Jacqueline, you know, I think she's one of the unsung heroes of women's wrestling, and she worked her ass off to make Sable look like an incredible threat and a women's wrestler in the Attitude Era. So, you know, kudos to Jacqueline. She's a hard worker. She has legitimacy. You know, she has respect in the industry. I loved her as the coach of Tough Enough, where she told all the ladies, "You ain't calling me Jacqueline, honey. You're going to refer to me as Miss Jackie, you understand?" You know, so, you know, Jacqueline keeps it 100, and I'm glad to see her getting her spot in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Jackie deserves it. The very first time I saw Jacqueline was in, she was in WCW, and she was out there with Kevin Sullivan. She was beating up the Disco Inferno and Halloween Havoc and all that. And then seeing her come over to the WWF, you know, PMS, Pretty Mean Sisters, not really on the level of Sable or any of the other divas. Don't know why, but she was never on that level. But still, she was one of the defining parts of that Attitude Era as far as women go, so she definitely deserves to go in.
Oh, and yeah, and remember in WCW, when she was accompanying Kevin Sullivan in the ring, they actually had her beating up men, body slamming men right on the outside of the ring. So they had her doing that long before China was doing it. So again, actually, if you really think about it, Jacqueline is probably one of the most well-traveled female wrestlers of all time. She's worked everywhere. And I would love to just sit down with her and hear some road stories, locker room stories and whatnot, because she has a lot of stories to tell, a lot of experience, and she's getting her just due. A great addition to the WWE Hall of Fame. And of course, Regis Philbin, he appeared at WrestleMania 7. He did an interview with The Undertaker where Paul Bearer and the Dead Man were kind of measuring him for a coffin. And of course, Regis over the years was very, very good to WWE, always having the wrestlers come on his show. So I have no problem with him being the celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame.
Not a problem with that either. Regis Philbin was always one of my favorite people to watch on TV with Regis and Kathy Lee, especially when they would have the WWF wrestlers on there. And it came out later on that Kathy Lee was not a fan of the wrestlers being on the show. And what a bitch.
No, she wasn't a fan at all, but he was. And right, the other wrestlers were on, she barely said a word. But he did a real good job at kind of putting over the wrestlers and making them seem like, you know, legitimate superstars. He wasn't just poking fun at them. He wasn't just doing silly things. Well, sometimes he did silly things, but it was all in good fun and to put the product over. So, you know, we just filming somebody member of the Hall of Fame. But now we move on to some more Ring of Honor news, Frank D, as it was announced earlier today that Jay Lethal and the team of Red Dragon, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, have re-signed with Ring of Honor. And I think that is a very good move by Ring of Honor, considering in this climate right now, this pro wrestling climate right now, where WWE is trying to get all the top stars to saturate their WWE main roster or their NXT roster. Jay Lethal and Red Dragon are staying in Ring of Honor.
Right, Red Dragon and Jay Lethal are staying in Ring of Honor. And that's a big deal and a big coup for them that they won't have to lose any more talent to WWE. Now, we don't have any exact details on those contracts, but they are saying there, we do know that. Let's transition away from talking about Ring of Honor and let's talk about Samoa Joe. Now, there's rumors going around right now that Samoa Joe is actually, in fact, headed to the main roster, possibly after WrestleMania 32, quite frankly, the next day on Monday Night Raw. What's your thoughts on Samoa Joe going to the main roster finally?
The way I look at it, Samoa Joe needs to be in the WWE main roster. I mean, he's one of the more well-known pro wrestling names as far as being on television with TNA for a very long time, done his thing in Ring of Honor, done his thing in Japan, and I think he's just really spinning his wheels. So I think a run in the WWE main roster will serve him very, very well. He's already proven that he can sell merchandise, and I think WWE could actually use another badass kind of character. And I think Samoa Joe just might fill that need for him.
Yeah, I mean, Samoa Joe going to the main roster, the endless possibilities of different matches that we can see. We can see him versus AJ Styles all over again. We can see him working with talents like Seth Rollins. We can see him working with Dean Ambrose. You can see him versus Chris Jericho. You can see him do a lot of different things. So I can't wait for him to come up to the main roster, because I think that he is exhausted everything down there at NXT. Unless they're going to put the belt on Joe, I think that they should go ahead and move him on up.
It's funny you mentioned Seth Rollins, Frank D, because I got to tell you right now, the dude's recovering, working hard at rehab. You know that guy wants to be back in the fold as soon as possible. He wants that gold back again as soon as possible. But if you're Seth Rollins right now, who's definitely cares about his craft, he must be salivating at the fact right now that you have all these guys coming to the main roster. Karl Anderson, AJ Styles, possibly Samoa Joe, Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, and who knows what else? I mean, Seth Rollins would feel like, wow, I'm going to have new toys to play with when I come back.
Exactly. I can't wait for Seth Rollins to come back and work with AJ Styles again, or come in and work with Kevin Owens, or work with a Jericho or somebody like that. I mean, fresh matches, and that's what you need. You need fresh matches. And, you know, quite honestly, if Samoa Joe, you know, doesn't get the NXT Championship, like I said before, go ahead and move him to the main roster and let's see what he can do.
Well, it looks like Samoa Joe is not going to get the NXT Championship, because it appears that Finn Balor is going to remain in NXT and he's going to stay there as the face of the brand. Now, that's obviously disappointing for us fans, because Finn Balor is truly one of the best wrestlers in the world, arguably the best wrestler in the world. He definitely is main roster worthy. I don't think anybody's going to argue that whatsoever. But WWE wants to keep that NXT brand strong, and Finn Balor's the guy that you do it with. And at the same time, though, Finn Balor has said on a couple occasions that, you know, he actually likes where he is right now in NXT, because if he goes to WWE main roster, there's a possibility he might get lost in the shuffle. So even though for fans it might be disappointing that we're not going to see Finn Balor mixing up on the main roster with the likes of AJ Styles, Triple H, Seth Rollins, what have you, Finn Balor, from the report, seems absolutely fine with this. And if Finn Balor is fine with this, the man himself is okay with this, I have no complaints.
Yeah, I mean, I have no complaints either. I think Finn Balor is an incredible talent. I think they need to kind of evolve the demon gimmick a little bit, because what he's wearing right now, as far as the makeup goes, gets a little repetitive. But on the topic of NXT, Austin Aries will actually make his in-ring debut with NXT on March 30th. Episode of NXT, so that should be a very good way to introduce Austin Aries to the WWE universe down there at NXT in Full Sail University.
And that's actually the perfect time for Austin Aries to make his in-ring debut in NXT, because that's literally a couple of days before April 1st, where he's going to wrestle Baron Corbin on the live NXT TakeOver Dallas special happening on the WWE Network. So I think from the TV taping perspective, great timing. Now let's move on to some contract news, if you will, regarding WWE. And one, Animal Batista. ProWrestlingSheet.com revealed that Vince McMahon made an offer for Batista to appear at WrestleMania 32 coming up. Now, it also looks like, according to ProWrestlingSheet.com, that when Vince McMahon made the offer to Batista, Batista was actually assuming that Vince wanted him to wrestle. But it turns out Vince does not want Batista to wrestle. He just simply wants him to appear. But in the end, Batista turned the offer down, even though the door is still open to make an appearance in a non-wrestling role. And quite frankly, it looks like he's going to be filming Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 around the time WrestleMania is taking place. So I think he has bigger fish to fry, and I don't blame him for turning down WWE's offer, considering what happened the last time he came back to WWE.
Let's be honest about the situation with Batista. Batista's run in 2014 wasn't a very memorable one. I mean, he came in at the wrong time. He came in during Daniel Bryan fever, and that affected him tremendously. And he came back wearing all these skinny jeans and all this dumb shit, so it kind of hurt him. The only thing I can say that he did that I enjoyed was his matches he had with The Shield. But other than that, I mean, the guy is a Hollywood star now. He's making money in Hollywood. I think that's what Batista's always wanted. I think he might still have a passion and a love for the WWE, but he's already said in the past he just wants to work house shows. He doesn't want to work the TV because he thinks creative sucks. And that's just the bottom line.
I mean, a lot of people look at Batista's last run in 2014. they kind of crap on him, and they really look at it only through the Daniel Bryan perspective. But you really have to also look at this through the Batista perspective. WWE calls him in October of 2013 and says, "Hey, Batista, we want to make this big plan for you. We want to bring you back. We're going to pay you a hell of a lot of money, and we're going to have you main event WrestleMania against Randy Orton. You're going to win the championship at WrestleMania 30. So when you hear these plans, it's like, damn, sign the check and sign me up. And then, of course, when he comes back, as you said, in the middle of Daniel Bryan fever, and the fans just look at it as, hell no, you're trying to steal Daniel Bryan's spot, and they booed him at every turn to the point where WWE had no choice but to change their plans, renege on the promises they made to Batista, and put the belt on Daniel Bryan. Now, if you're Batista, you're probably pissed off because you were told you're getting the belt. You're going to be main event in WrestleMania. And while he main evented WrestleMania for the championship, the idea that was pitched to him was that he was going to main event WrestleMania as the big hero returning babyface that everybody was going to cheer and watch him dethrone Randy Orton. That just did not happen whatsoever. And I'd be pretty pissed. Even though, you know, if you really look at this from an objective point of view, you realize they had to flip the script. But again, if you're Batista, you're going to be very cautious whenever Vince McMahon makes an offer to you.
Well, of course. I mean, the guy was promised one thing, and that didn't happen. And all of a sudden now, they're in a precarious situation because they are low on star power. And once again, Batista is not going to put 100,000 people in that stadium. I don't think anything they have right now is going to put 100,000 people in that stadium. But if you're Batista, and you've had a successful Hollywood career so far with that Guardians of the Galaxy, and I believe he was in a James Bond film as well, and he has other projects coming up, why would you want to have anything to do with WWE?
Oh, absolutely, because the thing is with Batista, yes, he was in the James Bond movie Spectre. He's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy, and it came out a few months ago that Batista's character, Drax the Destroyer, is going to play a big role in the upcoming Avengers Infinity movie. So they're filming that in actually two parts, Avengers Infinity Part 1 and Part 2. So Batista is definitely going to have his hands full in Hollywood. He's getting more movie roles by the day. People love him. He looks the part that they have him in. So, again, he's bigger fish to fry. He's making money. It's something he wants to do. He's not tearing his body apart. So he doesn't need WWE. When you hear him talk about wrestling, you can tell there's a passion for the business. He has passion for wrestling. He loves the business. But at the end of the day, you have to make him an offer and give him something creative that's going to, you know, satisfy his needs. And I don't think WWE can do that right now.
No, they can't. And just basically he felt like he was lied to with this 14 run. So it's a different time now. It's a different Batista. This Batista that we have now was a Batista when he left that Triple H says, yo, and when your movie fails and flops at the box office, you know, don't come crawling back on your knees. Well, kind of like the roles had kind of reversed on that one.
Oh, I thought that was funny in retrospect because when Batista joined the Guardians of the Galaxy cast, Hollywood wasn't sure if that movie was going to make money because the Guardians of the Galaxy was one of Marvel's lesser known properties. And people were thinking, okay, this movie will probably make $30, $40 million tops. But of course, the movie ended up making $90 million opening weekend. And people absolutely loved every aspect of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And a lot of people thought Batista was the best part of that movie. So it definitely fit the script on what Triple H said, you know. So Batista's definitely got a lot of things going on, and he can pick and choose what he wants to do as far as certain entertainment ventures. And it goes back to what WWE's trying to do. They're trying to get all these wrestlers to appear at WrestleMania so they can hype. Steve Austin appearing at WrestleMania. The Rock appearing at WrestleMania. Batista appearing at WrestleMania. And I think WWE needs to realize that, you know, wrestling fans aren't really going to get that excited for somebody simply appearing at WrestleMania. Now, if you were to say The Rock's wrestling at WrestleMania, that Austin's wrestling at WrestleMania, that Batista's wrestling at WrestleMania, that will get people more excited.
Yeah, exactly. You know, wrestling fans want to see wrestlers wrestle, not wrestlers appear. And WWE is trying to use the same deal they did at WrestleMania 27 when The Rock came back and he hosted WrestleMania that year. And it's just not going to work now. I mean, you have a much bigger audience that you're trying to bring in for that show. You're trying to break attendance records. And I'm sorry, but The Rock appearing, Stone Cold Steve Austin appearing, Batista possibly appearing it's just not going to cut the mustard on this situation. So I think that they need to reevaluate their plans. And they wouldn't have this situation going on right now if they had have done right by their talents and got a lot of these guys over. Instead of depending on one guy, it's always going to be just this guy, one guy. Well, now look at everybody that's on the shelf. You got Cesaro out, Orton out, Cena out, Rollins out, you know. Sheamus, 3 to 5 months. You know what I'm saying? It's just bad.
I mean, you got Sheamus out 3 to 5 months. Wade Barrett's out. Sin Cara is out. I mean, even though they really don't push Sin Cara. But also, Dave Meltzer is saying that he's heard reports that another high-level WWE wrestler is actually injured, and he's working right now to find confirmation if that's true and who it is. So if that's true, this is just really an example of WWE's 50-50 booking biting them in the ass because of the fact that they book everybody else at 50-50 except for the main guy and John Cena. Nobody's over. And now that you have a depleted roster and so many injuries, you only have 60-plus days to get somebody over. It's going to be very hard to get new talent over to the level you need them to draw 100,000 people when you, for so long, you've kept them at such a mediocre level. And of course, let's move on to one Jerry the King Lawler. If you've noticed as of late, WWE has been doing a pretty interesting job at phasing the King out of their television because he's no longer commentating on Raw. He was moved to SmackDown, and now he's no longer doing the commentary for the pay-per-views, and he's now been pushed back to the pay-per-view kickoff panel. And I gotta tell you right now, Jerry Lawler looked bored as fuck sitting there with Booker T, Corey Graves, and Renee Young. He looked bored. He didn't want to be there. He was just looking to cash a check, and that was it.
So basically here, you take Jerry the King Lawler, and you put him on a pre-show here with Booker T, Renee Young and her lisp, and Corey Graves. Now, the only problem that I have with this, athlete, is simply this. Why the hell is Corey Graves on the pre-show when a guy should be down there helping call him the damn pay-per-view?
You know, I really don't know what WWE does in their decision-making as far as putting certain talents on air, whether it's NXT, WWE, SmackDown, WWE, Raw, pay-per-view. But I do like Corey Graves. I think he actually adds to the product, much like Mauro Ranallo very much adds to the product. But Jerry Lawler just sat there looking bored. He just did not want to be there at all. And again,
he's been relegated. He was demoted. I mean, how can you? There's no nicer way to say it. Dude got demoted to the pre-show. You know that's a demotion spot. I mean, look at Booker T. Booker T, the same thing happened to Booker. Booker was hosting Raw. And then Booker went to do that whack-ass Tough Enough. And then he came back and they said, oh, Booker, we don't have anything for you. We're going to move you to, what was it, SmackDown, I think it was, or some shit.
Oh, no, you're not going to get any argument out of me. I mean, if you really think about it, Jerry Lawler has been demoted twice in under a year, first off of Raw and now off the pay-per-view. And again, I have nothing to base this on. This is just pure speculation on my part. But I truly believe we are seeing the final days of Jerry Lawler in the WWE because I truly feel that once his contract is up, WWE is simply going to not re-sign him.
Probably not. I mean, they'll probably use Lawler as an ambassador or something moving forward. But I'm going to tell you right now, if I have to pick between using, you know, Byron Saxton or Jerry Lawler, I'm going to use Jerry Lawler every day. Because Byron Saxton is just garbage. I mean, that is basically, you know, Bryant Gumbel or Carlton Banks on fucking commentary. That's pretty much what it is.
He is Tom from the Boondocks. Absolutely.
You're damn right. And that's just pretty much what it is.
And of course, for Jerry Lawler, let's say his contract's up in a year and WWE decides to not re-sign him. You know, he'll make money on the independents, but at the same time, Lawler commands a pretty penny on the independents, and he gets it in most places because people like to see Jerry Lawler, and he makes a ton of money with his merchandise, his autograph stand, so he'll make some money on, you know, outside WWE, but also, you know, he'll still appear in WWE from time to time, and they'll also have him on a Legends deal, you know that, they'll put him on a Legends deal and whatnot, but I think as far as commentary and being a central piece of WWE television production, I think his days are numbered.
I totally agree with that, and I guess we'll see what happens as we move forward. With Jerry the King Lawler. I mean, I think you're right. I think they are slowly but surely phasing the King out of WWE television. And it's kind of sad, you know, but they got rid of JR, so I guess the King is next.
Yeah, and when you actually really look at the equation, when you looked at him working with JBL and Michael Cole, he really didn't fit in. He was kind of like the third wheel of that commentary team. And it wasn't because of his work was lacking or because like he wasn't bringing his A game. It was simply because Michael Cole and JBL, they're pretty much puppets. All they do is listen to what Vince McMahon says in their earpiece and they repeat it, where Jerry Lawler's doing, more natural commentary because Vince really doesn't tell Jerry Lawler what to do in that headset unless he wants a particular storyline to be put over really strong, a particular piece of a storyline put over really strong. But when you're working with two commentators that are working one way and you're working a different style, it's hard to have chemistry. And as a result, Jerry Lawler, again, was just the third wheel in that equation.
Yeah, pretty much. And that is going to conclude the Raw Deal Podcast right here at Gerwick.net, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and SoundCloud. Atlee, one more time, go ahead and plug your social media.
You definitely check me out on Twitter at Atlee Green. I hit up my blog at thegreenscreen.net, and I just want to give a shout-out to Matt Storm, Gerwick.net contributor, who is going to be doing the NXT report starting next week. So, Matt, show them what you got.
Absolutely. And check out youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast, the official YouTube channel of Gerwick.net. Tons of interview content up there. As I've said before, Eric Bischoff, Vince Russo, Too Cold Scorpio, everybody is up there right now for your listening pleasure. So check it out today, youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast. Like and subscribe to the channel. We definitely appreciate that. Also, check out prowrestlingtees.com/Gerwick today and check out the Raw Deal t-shirt up there for sale. That's prowrestlingtees.com/Gerwick. For Abby Green, I'm Frank D, and we will catch you on the next edition of the Raw Deal Podcast right here at Gerwick.net.